In the tiny cave, Nefer crawled close to Mintaka and took her in his arms. He tried to speak to her, to comfort and encourage her, but both their heads were swathed with cloth, and the wind drowned out all sound. She laid her head on his shoulder, and they clung to each other. They were entombed in the roaring darkness, dumb and blinded and half-suffocated. Each hot breath they drew had to be strained through cloth, and taken only a sip at a time to prevent a rush of talcum-fine sand passing between their lips. After a while the roar of the wind deafened them and dulled all their other senses. It went on and on without ceasing or relenting. They had no way to judge the passage of time, except the tiniest awareness of light and darkness through their closed eyelids. To mark the arrival of the day, there was a faint rosy aura. When night fell, it faded into utter darkness. Nefer had never known such complete and endless dark. If it had not been for Mintaka's body pressed close to his, he thought he would have gone mad. Every once in a while she stirred against him and answered the pressure of his arms with her own. He might have slept, but there were no dreams, just the roaring of the Khamsin and the darkness. After another long while he tried to move his legs, but he could not. In a blind panic he thought he'd lost control of his body, that he was weak and dying. He tried again with all his strength, and managed to move his foot and toes. Then he knew that he was entrapped by the sand that was filtering into their shelter through the chinks in the zareba wall. It had already piled up as high as his waist. They were slowly being buried alive. The thought of that insidious death filled him with terror. With his bare hands he scraped away enough sand to be able to move his legs, then did the same for Mintaka. He felt the others working at the same task in the crowded cave, trying to fight back the sand, but it trickled in like water. It was deposited on them from the dense clouds of swirling dust, and the storm raged on. For 2 days and three nights the wind never relented. During this time Nefer managed to keep back the sand just enough to move his head and his arms, but his lower body was encased solidly. He could not begin to dig himself out, for there was nowhere to which he could move the sand. He reached up one hand and touched the stone roof inches above his head. He ran his fingers across it and realized it was slightly domed. Their heads were in this small space, but the sand had sealed off the cave entrance so that no more sand could penetrate. They could still hear the storm bellow endlessly. He waited. At times he felt Mintaka sobbing quietly beside him and tried to comfort her with a gentle pressure of his arms. The air trapped with them in the tiny headspace became fetid and stale. He thought that soon it would no longer keep them alive. But some fresh air must have been filtering through the sand, for although each breath was a struggle, they were still alive. They drank most of the water that remained in the water skins, leaving only a tiny amount in the bottom. Then the thirst came. Even though they were unable to move their bodies to use up moisture, the hot, dry sand and air sucked it out of them. Nefer felt his tongue slowly cleave to the roof of his mouth. Then it began to swell, so that his breathing, already difficult, became almost impossible because of the huge, spongy thing that filled his mouth. With a fear and a thirst, he lost track of time, and it seemed that years had passed. Nefer aroused himself from the stupor that was slowly overtaking him. He realized that something had changed. He tried to fathom what it was, but his mind was numb and unresponsive. Mintaka was very still beside him. He squeezed her fearfully. In reply, he felt a tiny shudder of movement. She was still alive. Both of them were alive, but entombed, able only to move some small part of their bodies. He felt himself drifting back into that dark stupor, into haunted dreams of water, of cool green expanses of the great river, of cascades and bright rivulets of water. He forced himself up from the darkness and listened. He heard nothing. That was what had roused him. There was no sound. The roaring clamour of the Khamsin had given way to a profound silence. The silence of a sealed tomb, he thought. And the horror returned full force. He began to struggle again, to try to work his way out of the sand. He managed at last to free his right arm, reached out and found Mintaka's covered head. He stroked it, and in the silence heard her whimper. He tried to speak, to reassure her, but his swollen tongue would let no word pass. Instead, he reached out beyond her to see if he could touch Hilto, who had been sitting on the far side of her. Either Hilto was gone, or was beyond the reach of his arm, for he touched nothing. He rested a while, then roused himself once more and made an effort to clear the sand from around the entrance to the cave. But there was little space to store what he had scraped away. A handful at a time, he scooped it away and pushed it into a nook in their tiny cell. Soon he was working at the furthest reach of his right arm, scraping away a few grains at a time. It was a despairing attempt, but he knew that he had to keep trying or give up hope. Abruptly, he felt the sand cascade out from under his fingers, and even through the folds of his headcloth, fresh air that had not been breathed seeped into the cave. And he was aware of the faintest glimmer of light beyond his closed eyelids. Painfully, he began to pull away the cloth from his face. The light grew stronger, and the air was sweet in his dry mouth and aching lungs. When his face was free of the cloth, he half opened one eye and was almost dazzled by the light. When his vision had adjusted, he saw that he'd opened a hole to the outside that was no larger than the circle of his thumb and forefinger. But from beyond, there was quiet. The storm had passed. Excited and with new hope, he tugged at the cloth that covered Mintaka's head and heard her breathe the fresh air. Again he tried to speak, but again his voice failed him. He tried to move, to escape from the deadly grip of the heavy sand, but his body was still encased to the armpits. With all his remaining strength he struggled silently to free himself, but the effort soon exhausted him, and his throat burned and ached with thirst. He thought how cruel it would be to die here with the promise of air and light mocking him through that tiny cleft. He closed his eyes again wearily, giving up. Then he was aware of another change in the light, and he opened his eye again. With a sense of disbelief, he saw a hand reaching through the opening towards him, an ancient hand with desiccated skin covered with the dark blotches of age. "Nefer!" He heard a voice so strange, so hoarse and altered, that for a moment he doubted it was the Magus.
"Nefer, can you hear me?"
Nefer tried to reply, but still could not speak. He reached out and touched Taita's fingers. Immediately the old man's fingers closed over his with surprising strength.
"Hold hard. We will dig you out."
He heard other voices then, rough and faint with thirst and effort, and hands scraped away the sand that entrapped him, until at last they could lay hold of him and pull him free of the soft, deadly grasp of the sand. Nefer slithered out through the narrow cleft as though the rocky hillock was giving birth to him. Then Hilto and Merin reached in again and dragged Mintaka out of the soft, dark womb into the brilliant sunlight. They lifted the pair to their feet and held them from falling again, for their legs had no strength. Nefer shrugged off Merin's hands, lurched across to Mintaka, and embraced her silently. She was shivering as though in a crisis of malaria. After a while, he held her at arm's length and studied her face with horror and pity. Her hair was white with sand, which clung thickly in her eyebrows. Her eyes had receded into deep purple cavities, and her lips were swollen black, so that when she tried to speak they cracked open and a drop of blood bright as a ruby trickled down her chin.
"Water,"
Nefer managed to articulate at last.
"She must have water."
He dropped to his knees and began frantically to dig into the sand that still blocked the cave. Merrin and Hilto were working beside him, and they uncovered the water skin. They pulled it out and found that most of the water that had remained had evaporated or been squeezed from it. There remained only sufficient for a few mouthfuls each, but even that amount was enough to keep them alive a little longer. Never felt strength return to his dehydrated body, and for the first time he looked about him. It was the middle of the morning. He did not know what morning or for how many days they'd been buried. There was still a haze of fine sand like gold dust in the still air. He shaded his eyes, looked out over the desert, and did not recognize it. The landscape had changed completely. The high dunes had marched away to be replaced by others of different shape and alignment. There were valleys where there had been mountains, and vales where hills had stood. Even the colours had changed. The sullen purples and bruised blues had been replaced by reds and golden yellows. He shook his head in wonder and looked at Taita. The Magus was leaning on his staff, watching Nefer with those pale, ancient but ageless eyes.
"Trok,"
Nefer managed to say.
"Where?"
"Buried,"
Taita replied. And now Nefer could see that he also was dried out like a stick of firewood and suffering the same agonies as they were.
"Water,"
Nefer whispered, touching his swollen and bleeding mouth.
"Come,"
said Taita. Nefer took Mintaka's hand, and slowly they followed the Magus out into the brazen sands. Now at last, thirst and exposure had taken their toll on Taita, and he moved slowly and stiffly. The others staggered along behind him. Taita seemed to be wandering aimlessly through the new valleys of fine sand that ran beneath their feet. He held out his staff in front of him, making a sweeping motion with it. Once or twice he lowered himself to his knees and touched the earth with his forehead.
"What is he doing?"
Mintaka whispered. The water that they'd drunk had not been enough to sustain her, and she was weakening again.
"Is he praying?"
Nefer only shook his head. He'd not squander his own meager reserves by speaking unnecessarily. Taita moved on slowly, and by the way he was sweeping with his staff, Nefer was reminded of a water diviner at work. Once again, Taita knelt and placed his face close to the earth. This time Nefer watched him with more attention and saw that he was not praying, but sniffing the air close to the surface of the sand. Then he knew what Taita was doing.
"He's searching for the buried chariots of Trok's division," he whispered to Mintaka. "His staff is his divining rod, and he's sniffing for the scent of putrescence below the sand."
Taita stood up painfully and nodded to Hilto.
"Dig here,"
he ordered. They all crowded forward and began to scrape away the loose sand with cupped hands. They had not far to go. An arm span deep, they struck something hard and redoubled their efforts. Quickly, they exposed the wheel rim of a chariot that was lying on its side. Another few minutes of frantic digging, and they pulled out a water skin. They stared at it in despair, for it had burst open, perhaps when the chariot had capsized. It was dry, and though they squeezed it frantically, it yielded not a single drop of the precious fluid.
"There must be another,"
Nefer spoke through dry, swollen lips.
"Dig deeper."
They clawed at the sand in a last despairing burst of strength, and as the excavation deepened, the stench of the dead horses in the traces grew stronger and more nauseating. They'd been lying in the heat all these days. Suddenly, Nefer reached deeper into the hole and felt something soft and yielding. He pressed it, and they all heard the gurgle and slosh of water. He swept away more of the loose sand, and between them they lifted out a bulging water skin. They were mumbling and whimpering with thirst as Taita opened the stopper and poured it into the leather bucket that had lain beside the water skin in the bottom of the excavation. The water was the temperature of blood, but when Taita held the bucket to Mintaka's lips, she closed her eyes and drank in quiet ecstasy.
"Not too much at first,"
Taita warned her, took the bucket from her, and passed it to Nefa. They drank in turn, then Mintaka drank again, and the bucket made another circuit. In the meantime, Taita left them to continue his search. In a short time, he called them to dig again. This time they were lucky. Not only was the chariot under less sand, but there were three water skins, and none was damaged.
"The horses, now,"
Taita told them, and they looked at each other guiltily. In their desperate preoccupation, they had forgotten them. Carrying the water skins, they trudged back through the sand to the base of the cliff. The narrow gully in which they had pegged down the horses must have been well aligned to avoid the full force of the Khamsin. When they began to dig, using the wooden spade that they had found among the equipment of the buried chariot, they found the first horse almost at once. However, the stink warned them what to expect. The beast was dead and its stomach ballooned with gas. They left it and dug for the next animal. This time they were more fortunate. It was a mare, the most willing and robust of the horses they'd captured at the sinking sands. She was alive, but barely so. They cut the retaining halter that had held her down, but she was too weak to come to her feet unaided. The men lifted her between them. She stood, weak and shivering, reeling and threatening to fall again, but she drank greedily from the bucket Mintaka held for her, and seemed at once to improve. In the meantime, the men were digging for the other horses. They found two more dead of thirst or suffocation, but another two still alive. They also responded immediately they were given water. They left Mintaka to care for the three pathetic beasts and went back to the chariots that they'd uncovered to find fodder. They brought back bags of grain and another water skin.
"You're doing good work with them,"
Nefa told Mintaka as he stroked the mare's neck.
"But I fear they're too far gone ever to pull another chariot."
She rounded on him fiercely.
"I'll bring all of them through, I swear to the goddess. There must be hundreds more fodder bags and water skins out there under the sand. We may have to stay here for many more days. But when we leave, these gallant creatures will take us out."
Nefer laughed at her through his cracked scab lips.
"I'm in deep awe of your passionate nature."
"Then provoke me no further,"
she warned him,
"or you'll see more proof of it."
It was the first time she'd smiled since the passing of the Khamsin.
"I'll go back and help the others. We cannot have too great a supply of water."
He left her and went down into the sands where Taita was divining further afield. Not all the Hyksos chariots were so lightly covered with sand as the ones they'd first found. Many were hidden forever beneath the high new dunes. They moved further and further away from the rocky hillock as the search went on. Beneath the sands they found many corpses, swollen bellies stinking. Soon they were out of earshot of where Mintaka was tending the horses like a syced.